Hi, it's Diane. Great to be back with you for our Tuesday edition of On My Mind. It's hard to sum up who Eva Chin is in one simple title. She's a former magazine editor, a social media star, a fashion icon, particularly for women in their 20s and 30s. And now she's a children's book author. On Instagram, she documents her life in photos, what she wears, the highs and lows of being a mother to two young kids, and her job as director of fashion partnerships at Instagram. Her new children's book is Juno Valentine and the Magical Shoes. Eva stopped by the studio last week on her book tour. Eva Chin, it's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
And I have to tell you, I love the book, Juno Valentine and the Magical Shoes. It's your first book.
It is my first ever book, and it's been quite an experience. I'm here on this book tour. I think this is my eighth city in about 7 days.
Wow.
So I'm a little bit fatigued, but I'm really excited to be here in D.C. I went to college in Baltimore, and I used to come down here to D.C. all the time.
Well, we must say you went to Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, assuming that you were going to become a doctor.
Yes, I think most people who go to Johns Hopkins assume they're going to become doctors or engineers, which was not in the cards for me.
Why not?
You know, I followed this track of pre-med because it was very much what my parents wanted. And I think a lot of the time when you're 17 years old, and of course you want to please your parents, I just kind of followed along mindlessly. I always had an aptitude for science, but my true passion was really in writing and in the creative arts. And I didn't really realize that until I did a summer internship at Harper's Bazaar, the fashion magazine. And that kind of was the fork in the road that made all the difference for me. I really could feel my brain come alive, and just I was so inspired by being in the journalism space.
And the science part of you sort of went the other way.
Well, I'm still very interested. This is kind of funny, but like the magazine Prevention Magazine, which I don't know if you know.
Oh, I know it quite
I started
well.
Reading that when I was like 17 years old, because I always just loved reading about studies and like new nutrition facts. And I'm still that way. I love reading a study about the health importance of walnuts or something like that. So I'm a big fan of that. So I'm still very much interested in nutrition and wellness. But practicing medicine, not so much.
Not so much. We should say that you, as am I, are first generation in this country.
Ah, where are you from?
Well, my parents came from the Middle East.
Oh.
My mother from Alexandria, Egypt. My father from Beirut, Lebanon.
Wow.
And your parents came here from?
China and Taiwan. So exactly. And I think that being a first generation American, that's also a lot of the time, first-generation citizens, they want to do something that's considered stable or safe, like medicine or law or engineering. And, you know, the creative arts is definitely not that, you know, as stable as those fields. But for me, it was always really important to follow my passion and follow my heart. And that's one of the reasons I wrote this book, too, because I wanted young girls and boys, because boys can read books about shoes too.
Why not? Of course.
Why not?
Absolutely.
And I wanted them to know that the best thing to do is to follow your heart and to be yourself.
Well, your mother also followed her heart. She was a great fashionista.
Yes. Someone asked me the question the other day, who are your fashion icons? And my mother definitely is one of them. She is always well coiffed. She has beautiful skin. She always had red lipstick on. And me, like, for instance, right now, I just stepped off the train. I'm a little disheveled. I am traveling with my
You look great.
Oh, I'm traveling with my 4-year-old daughter. So
I'm
barely surviving right now. But my mother is always like, brush your hair, you know, wash your face, put some makeup on. And I'm like, Mom, I'm barely holding it together right now.
I love this story about the Balenciaga bag that was your mother's that you picked up. And she said, I hope you didn't buy that.
Yes.
And you said it was hers.
It was hers. Exactly. My mother has a very nice collection of accessories that I'm known to sometimes pop into. But even now, I look back at pictures of my mother from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. There's so many items of clothing where I ask, like, Mom, where is this Max Mara vintage, you know, amazing camel coat? And she was like, oh, I gave that away like in 1994. And I'm like, why? You should have kept it because it's so in fashion right now. And I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, I'm a little bit of a fashion hoarder, because I'm like, well, what if my daughter, who's only four now, but in 10 years from now or in 15 years from now when she's 19 years old, she might need a, you know, a leopard print faux fur coat like the one I'm wearing right now.
Exactly. Is it your daughter who is in this book?
Well, Juno Valentine is definitely spirited like my daughter. She marches to the beat of her own drum, fashion and otherwise. And so there are a lot of elements of Ren, my daughter, in Juno and vice versa. My daughter's first reaction when she saw the book was like, Mommy, it's a book about me. And that's what I really hope, is that when girls and boys see this book, they can see a piece of themselves in it.
We should tell folks a little about the book. Juno Valentine is being called by her mother. And Juno says, wait, I can't find the shoes I want. So we go through a whole array of shoes.
Yes, it's the story of a little girl who loses her shoes, which I've done. And, you know, many of us have not been able to find our shoes as we're rushing out in the morning.
Or the shoes that we really
exactly,
want to wear.
Exactly, that one pair of whatever it is that you want to wear. And so she's searching for her shoes, and kind of like in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, or the Narnia books obviously had a huge impact on me, and or Where the Wild Things Are. She goes into this magical world where she's in this, what I call the Hall of Shoes, which is hundreds of thousands of pairs of shoes from women throughout time. So there's everyone from the famous American astronaut Sally Ride, who was one of the first women to go into space, to Serena Williams, to Misty Copeland, the ballet dancer, to Frida Kahlo and Cleopatra. She's in a room with shoes from all these iconic women. And then she tries them on and gets to step into their shoes, quite literally, before she ultimately realizes that she misses her own shoes and wants to be back in her own shoes.
Isn't that lovely?
I really wanted to write a book that had messages of self-esteem and empowerment, but in a light way that children can kind of like have fun with. But I also wanted to write a book that the parents and the moms and the dads, who, let's be honest, will probably have to read this five or six times in one night, I wanted the parents to enjoy it as well.
I love the illustrations.
Thank you.
Talk about them and how you found your illustrator.
So it's a very 2018 story. My illustrator, Derek Desierto, had posted a picture on Instagram, and he tagged me on the picture on Instagram, and then so which I noticed, and then I left a comment on his Instagram, and he always stuck with me because he has a very unique style of illustration where he does a mix of photos and illustration and collage. So when you look at the illustration of, for instance, Anna Wintour, the famous American Vogue editor, the patterns of the clothing she's wearing are from actual clothes. And a small detail about that illustration in particular is the cover of Vogue that Anna's holding is an illustration of her first ever cover of Vogue, which is something, if you love fashion, you would know these things, but you don't have to love fashion to notice details like that either. So then 1.5 years later, when I had my publisher was asking me, who do you think you want to work with for this book? I said, well, there's this guy on Instagram, and his name is Derek, and I don't know if he's done a book, but I really love his style. And so I direct messaged him on Instagram and said, so any interest in doing a book together? And he was like, are you kidding me?
Oh, how wonderful.
So it's a very modern internet tale, I guess.
And you have enjoyed working with him.
Absolutely.
How did you do that?
We actually didn't meet until after the book was done.
Oh, my.
Isn't that funny? We created the whole book through email exchanges and WhatsApp messaging and then FaceTimes, a lot of late nights FaceTiming because I have two young children at home, a four-year-old and a two-year-old. And Derek lives in Vancouver. So he would get back from work at around 9 p.m. New York time. And both my kids would finally be asleep. And then we would both turn on the computer and get back to work.
Now, you have more than 1 million followers on Instagram. But for our listeners who may not use Instagram, tell me a bit about how you got this following.
So I was a magazine editor for many years. I work at Instagram full time now. But before I worked at Instagram and Facebook, I was a magazine editor. And when I was a magazine editor, you'll go to an event for a launch of mascara or some sort of beauty product. And there'd be like a trapeze artist flying out of the sky, applying mascara onto a unwitting model. And I would see all these like wild and crazy things, but I wouldn't have a place to put it. And so I started posting a lot of my experiences on Instagram because Instagram is such a visual medium. No matter what you love, whether it's books, whether it's gardening, whether it's adorable dogs like your dog Bella, there's a way to kind of tap into that and you can follow and find your interests. So for me, I started posting all of these like beauty tips and things on Instagram and I kind of became known for it, I guess. And that really was what started the whole thing. You know, one of my favorite hashtags to follow is something called Bookstagram. So it's like Instagram, but about books. And if you follow the hashtag Bookstagram, which over 21 million people have used, your Instagram becomes this wonderful source of book recommendations from other people on Instagram around the world. I also love looking at hashtag libraries of Instagram, which is where people post photos of libraries on Instagram. And for someone who loves books as much as I do, always having a stream of dreamy libraries on your Instagram it's like therapy for me. It's very soothing.
You are now director of fashion partnerships at Instagram. Tell me what that job involves.
It's funny because my mom doesn't even fully understand what my job involves. Sometimes I don't either.
Well, if you explain it to me, maybe she'll get it.
I'll try. Instagram is a platform that a billion people are on around the world.
One billion
people are on Instagram. And basically everyone from, of course, athletes to celebrities, but the fashion community is very much on Instagram. So that means like models, designers, stylists, fashion magazines. So it's my job to work with those fashion personalities and be their resource. So any questions, for instance, let's think of an example, Mrs. Prada, the designer of Prada. If she has any questions about Instagram, I am her go-to person.
So how is it used? You say a lot of famous people use it, models and so on. Are they using it to display themselves and to make themselves more known?
Well, I think most of the people that I work with are already pretty known just because they're at the top of their, you know, the pinnacle of their career within fashion. What it is that nowadays, I think a lot of fashion personalities, they just want to have a direct connection to a model might want to talk to her followers directly. And it might not be about something related to an ad campaign or a clothing line that she's designing. It might be about something like mental health, or it might be about a charity that they're trying to support. Right now, in the wake of the really, really terrifying fires in California, for instance, a lot of models who grew up in California are using Instagram as a way to raise awareness for charitable causes or donation centers to collect clothing for people who lost their entire lives, really. And so I think the people who use Instagram in the best way possible use it in a really authentic way where it doesn't feel like they're just trying to sell a product or just trying to, like, you know, become more well known, but they're using it as a way to just have a connection with their followers.
So how about your children? You have a little girl and you have a little boy. To what extent do you allow people to see them?
I post my kids a lot. And for me, the rationale is that they're such a huge part of my life.
Like
they are literally my whole heart, my brain, like everything. And you know from being a parent that becoming a mother just changes you, like, you know, forever.
Totally.
And I think that just as there are decisions that people make about parenting, some parents choose to have their children be vegetarian, other parents don't. It's the same for kids in social media. I have friends who don't post their kids on Instagram, you know, at all. I also have friends who post like everything about their kids, from dirty diapers to mealtime. So it really depends. And Instagram actually just released a parent's guide for parents who might want to understand the platform better and know how to use it. And I think the site is wellness.instagram.com.
So how to be safe
exactly.
using it.
Exactly.
Exposing your children. Do you ever worry about that for yours?
For my kids, I think in general, the world, there's so much you can't control, right? And of course, I try to control as much as I can. Like, I don't post compromising images of my children. I wouldn't post them taking a bath or in any kind of close to, like, unclothed situation. I know parents who do that. It's up to them, but I personally would not do that. My followers generally, and having met so many of them over the last week and a half on this book tour, I feel very fortunate in that my followers are like such a great bunch. Most of them are in their early 20s and 30s. Some of them are, and I know because I just said that, now I know that there's going, the other day I was doing an event at the 92nd Street Y.
Yes.
And a woman came up to me afterwards and she said that, she was like, I'm 71 years old and I just want to say that I am a grandma who follows you. So grandmothers follow you too, which made me really happy.
Of course.
But I think that it, in terms of parenting and social media, it is a very personal decision. But the goal, of course, is to have all the tools like the parent's guide from Instagram so that you know what's best for you.
And now a quick break. When we come back, more from Eva Chen.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
It's news,
culture, and curiosities.
From the District, Tacoma Park,
Alexandria,
Friendship Heights,
Hyattsville,
Falls Church,
Northeast Washington, D.C., in your inbox every weekday afternoon.
DCS Daily.
Sign up at dcs.com/newsletter.
dcs.com/newsletter.
And we're back. Here's the rest of my conversation with Eva Chen. Tell me about how you have pioneered and been part of so many changes in the fashion industry as it's gone along in the last few years.
I think that the fashion industry has changed so much in the last, like, I would say decade. I remember when I started out in magazines, magazines were a very one-way conversation. You would help produce a magazine. It would show up in someone's mailbox. If someone wanted to interact with the magazine, they could write a letter to
sure.
the editor.
Right.
But who knows if the editor would ever get it or what would happen to that letter. And now in 2018, because of platforms like Instagram and Facebook, if a magazine puts out an editorial and it's a cover, immediately people can say, oh my gosh, I love Serena Williams. Like, this cover is so powerful. It moves me. And people can see instant feedback. And I think in that sense, fashion has become so much more democratic. It's become more accessible and egalitarian. And now so many of the young designers that I speak to, they're inspired by real people, whether it's people on the street or people they find on Instagram. You have houses like Gucci, for instance, that they are working with artists who no one had ever heard of before, but Gucci found them through Instagram because they were looking for young artists to work with. And so I do think in that way, I think one of the most amazing things, especially about the American spirit, is that it's a very entrepreneurial spirit, right? The American people, I am the product of the American dream, my parent, and as are you, you know, parents moving here and pioneering and wanting to strive for more. And I think one of the great things about this age we live in now is that if someone has an idea and they have a business idea and they have a very strong editorial voice and a strong like brand image on Instagram or on Facebook, they can build a whole brand for themselves just by sheer force of will and having conversations with their followers. So I think it's a really exciting time for people.
So what does it mean that you have created a brand for yourself?
For me, oh gosh, I think that even when I was a magazine editor, you know,
at Lucky
yeah. and at Teen Vogue, which is right. the little sister to Vogue, and also I was at Elle magazine, and I would say that there's a very stereotypical image of a fashion editor or a magazine editor, we'll put it that way, which tends to be a little cool, a little aloof, not quite so friendly. And it was funny because I remember being in my early 20s, and when everyone's in their early 20s, the question is, who am I? How should I be? and I remember thinking, like, gosh, I don't know if I fit in with all these super cool, super aloof, super, you know, too cool for school editors. And I always was like, well, I think of myself, I like to be nice to people. And I think that for me, my brand just kind of has always kind of, it's weird to talk about yourself as a brand, but I think it's always been that I'm just the nice, normal, hopefully, editor, grounded, hopefully. And so that's kind of what I became known for, especially when I worked at Teen Vogue, which is like the little sister to Vogue, that I was just the friendly magazine editor. And now I think at Instagram, I think it's helped that the fashion industry has turned nicer, and it's a little bit more, it's more supportive, and it's more about teamwork versus just one vision. And I think that's hopefully been to my favor.
What do you say perhaps to those who would argue that the fashion industry is aimed really at those who can afford only the best?
I think that fashion is a moving target these days. And it's also a really interesting time, because I remember 3 years ago when Karl Lagerfeld designed a sneaker for Chanel that cost $1,800. And they sold out instantly. And who'd have thought that, you know, a humble pair of Nikes or New Balances.
Sneakers.
Sneakers are one of the fastest growing, like, sectors in luxury right now, because a brand like, and we mentioned Balenciaga earlier, Balenciaga created a sneaker two years ago that was almost $2,000. I know. And Gucci has a sneaker out this season that is $2,400.
This is ridiculous.
But people are buying it because now I think comfort is cool. I mean, granted, I just came off a train with a four-year-old child, so I am dressed literally in one step up from pajamas. But but as one should when one is traveling with a four-year-old child.
Absolutely.
I have cookie crumbs on me. I have applesauce. So it's an interesting time in fashion, because the other thing that is very trendy right now is, you know, like puffer jackets, like puffy
yes,
insulated jackets.
Sure.
So these puffy insulated jackets became a trend 2 years ago, also because of Balenciaga, ironically. And they're jackets that you can buy probably at your local, you could buy a puffy jacket at like Target, for instance.
Absolutely.
For probably, like, I would say like $68, $78. And yet there is a wait list for a, I think it's $3,000 Balenciaga puffy jacket. And so fashion is just kind of topsy-turvy right now. You know, people always love irony in fashion, like that ironic sense of, oh, I'm wearing something that you don't know is expensive, but I know it's expensive, and that feels good. Even when you think about the Hermes Birkin bag, like that was always the ultimate luxury, anti-luxury luxury bag, where there's no huge logo on it. I call it stealth luxury, where you know it's expensive, I know it's expensive, but the average person might not. And so it's an interesting time in fashion now. I don't know if it's ever going to go back to the old style of fashion, where it was only for the 1%, although that's haute couture, really, where people are spending like $100,000 for a dress. That's the ultimate, of course. That's the fairy tale and the fantasy.
Now, what about you for your business wardrobe? What do you wear during the day?
It's funny because I, working at a tech company like Facebook and Instagram, and we do have an office here in DC that hopefully I'll have time to visit. The uniform, I will say, is very casual because I'm surrounded by engineers. So ironically, I went to Johns Hopkins, did not end up in the sciences, but I ended up at a company where everyone wasn't, like, you know, studied science. And the attire is very, very casual. It is blue jeans. It is t-shirts. It is hooded sweatshirts. And sometimes there are shoes on, sometimes not. And so for me, the average work attire, not today because I'm getting off the train, but I usually am wearing some sort of blue jean, but I tend to wear a pair of heels or a pair of Chanel ballet flats. And then I'll usually wear like a blazer and a white t-shirt. So I try to be professional, but it's anything goes. And I do think nowadays a lot of people who are graduating from college or, you know, recently postgraduate, they like a very casual work environment.
Absolutely. I see that all the time and am sometimes surprised by exactly how casual it gets. Having graduated high school in the 50s and gone to work as a secretary, I mean, the wardrobe was really absolutely, you know, not even slacks at that time, skirts and jackets and dresses. And now it's so different.
Now it's anything goes. I do feel like there's something so beautiful. I love looking at like old Irving Penn images, for instance, of there's something so beautiful to the formality of the 60s, you know, and I think it started kind of relaxing in the 70s. But that 60s attire and the 50s attire, it's so beautiful. And strangely, I think actually it might have been easier because if there is a kind of work uniform, then it's the same reason why when you're in school, if you have a uniform, it makes things easier because you know you're wearing a pinafore, for instance. And for men, I imagine a suit, it's like every day you grab a shirt and a suit. Whereas now it's like, do these high top sneakers go with that skirt, mini skirt? I don't know. And I don't, have you seen the show, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel? It's a show, I believe, on Amazon.
Yes.
And it's set in the, I think, 60s.
Yes.
And it is, like, the costumes for it are spectacular. And I always look at those silhouettes and I think, like, I mean, the Dior new look silhouette of like a very nipped waist, a very small jacket, and then a very full skirt. Like, I dream about that. I love
I mean,
that era.
Audrey Hepburn.
Audrey Hepburn.
She was the pinnacle
absolutely
of fine fashion and certainly wearing very expensive clothes at the time. But I think what you're saying is that fashion has changed so much that you don't have to wear expensive clothes to be fashionable.
Absolutely. I think nowadays so much of style, and you see this probably in your 16-year-old granddaughter,
yes,
so much of style is called personal style. And so when you're walking around in New York City, I live right by the NYU campus, I see the creativity and the way that these kids really mix and match. And they're wearing like a ball gown skirt with a pair of Converse high tops. And then they're wearing like a shredded t-shirt. And it's so inspiring to me. And I think that takes a lot of confidence. And I do think kids grow up faster now, where the average 16-year-old has as much like sartorial awareness as a 26-year-old. I know that when I was 16, I was still very much in my awkward teen phase. I was, you know, style was not something that I thought about. But I do think the average 16-year-old now is incredibly sophisticated.
I just learned yesterday that the producers of the podcast have established a Diane Rehm Instagram account. And they did that a few weeks ago. I'm told we have about 100 followers.
Not bad.
So any advice on how we should use that?
Definitely. Well, that's great. That's pretty awesome considering you just joined. So what I would say is show some of the behind the scenes. A lot of the time people think that an Instagram needs to be perfect or it needs to be very, very manicured or produced. And what people really want to see is, I mean, for lack of a better analogy, how the sausage is made. You know, they want to see the equipment. They want to see you with your notes. They want to see you with your beautiful enamel ceramic mug that was like hand-painted for you. They want to see the things that you can't see anywhere else, because Instagram is about bringing people closer to the people they love or the things that they love or the experiences that they love. The other thing I would do is use what are called hashtags. So that's a way to kind of tap into a community around something. So you have a dog that is a Havanese poodle mix.
Right.
There's probably a hashtag that's like Havapoo, Havipoo. I don't know what people call a Havanese poodle
they
mix.
They do call Mahavapoo.
Mahavapoo. Okay,
yeah.
There we go.
Yeah.
But there's probably like a hashtag for that. So when you're posting adorable images of Bella, use the hashtag, as people will then be able to see pictures of her, even if they don't follow you, or I don't know if your dog Bella has an Instagram account yet, but there are some Instagram dogs out there who have, like, I think the most famous dog on Instagram, I think, has over 5 million followers.
Oh my goodness.
Yes. It's a dog named Jif Palm. It's a Pomeranian.
Huh.
So it's, and there's a cat named Nala Cat, and I think Nala has over 3 million followers. Don't quote me on those numbers. I'm pretty sure they're wrong, but they have an extraordinary number of followers.
Now, I think one of the photographs that's already up there, we took on Halloween when I had a witch's hat on. It's the funniest photograph you've ever seen, but so be it.
Yeah, but that's what people want. I think people want to see things that your fans, who are such ardent followers of yours, they want to feel closer to you, and they want to feel like they are getting to know you better. And so sometimes seeing you with a witch's hat on or some sort of like funny anecdotes are great too. Like, are you wearing slippers under the recording table secretly? you know, like things that kind of show a deeper side of the work you do, is it's really what people are looking for.
Last question for you, Eva. How will you spend Thanksgiving this year?
Well, my parents live in the city, in New York City, with me, just a few blocks away from me, actually.
Wonderful.
And my brother lives in Brooklyn, and every year we alternate who hosts Thanksgiving. It is my turn this year, and so I will be probably frantically cooking, a little bit frenzied with a two-year-old boy lurching around, and my daughter probably getting into all sorts of mischief. I did pre-order my turkey this year.
You did?
I did not. I pre-ordered a turkey that's completely made already. And so I just have to like thaw it and heat it. You know, 2 years ago, I would have been like, oh, I should be basting it and, you know, seasoning it with fresh rosemary. And now I'm just like, with two young kids, I'm like, just order it. I'm just going to do that. Hopefully it is an uneventful Thanksgiving and just full of food and love.
That's the way it should be. And Eva, I hope that many people will buy Thanksgiving, have your beautiful book, and share it with their own families. It's really lovely.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me, Diane.
Lovely to have you. Thank you. And that's all for today. I want to wish you all a wonderful Thanksgiving. We'll have a special holiday rebroadcast for you this Friday and be back with new shows next week. I'd love to hear what's on your mind. Connect with us on Facebook and Twitter. Send us an email, drpodcast@wamu.org, or leave us a voicemail. The number is 202-854-8851, and go to our website, dianereem.org. Our theme music was composed by Cliff Harden, comes to us courtesy of the Capitol Soundtrack Project here at WAMU. The show is produced by Rebecca Kaufman and Allison Brody. Our engineers this week have been Douglas Bell and Natalie Yurev-Lipker. Thanks for listening. I'm Diane Rehm.